All right, so we'll start with the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadik Hed Amud Bet. So this is a Mishnah, actually, that we saw quoted in the Gemara in Baba Kama. So, and a lot of this Gemara today, actually, a lot of the Gemara that we're going to see on today's daf was Gemarot that we've seen in Baba Kama, so they should be at least, hopefully at least a little familiar. And here the Gemara is obviously putting together in a different context. So here the Mishnah was quoted, the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Kuf Dalid, in the Machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chista with regards to Shlichut. When one establishes a Shliach, Ayadeidim, right, how real or how empowered is that Shliach in order to be mitchayev him and own sin and other things. So the Mishnah was quoted as a question on that Machlokas between them, and they each had to explain the Mishnah differently. Well, you know, explain the Mishnah broadly, and want to just then note what they had said in the Gemara and Baba Kama. So the Mishnah starts, Ashoel et hapara, person who borrows a cow, v'shalcha lo biyad beno, biyad avdo, biyad shlucho. So the person sends the mash'il, right, sends this to the shoel with his son, his eved, or his shaliach. Oh, this is the questionable part, o biyad beno, biyad avdo, biyad shlucho shel shoel. He sends it with the child, the eved, or the shliach of the shoel, umeta, and then it dies, patur. In that instance, he's considered patur because the she'elah did not start. I mean, that until it reaches the shoel, the she'elah has not begun. Now, if the she'elah hasn't begun, the question is, how did this person, who's this beno, abdo, and shlucho here? I mean, how did the mash'il create or use the shliach of the shoel? Right, now, if the shoel really created a shliach, right, then it should be that the shoel is already chayav. So that's the machlokus that's referred to. This is why the mission was brought in the Gemara of Baba Kama, is the machlokus between Rav Chista and Rabba. Goes over there, Rav Chista says that this is the shliach of the shoel, is a case of schiro lekito. Happens to be a worker or an employee of the shoel. And since he's an employee of the shoel, he's a shliach, but he wasn't formally appointed to be a shliach. Had he been formally appointed to be a shliach, ein hochanami, that he would be, the she'elah would start from the time that he accepted it. On the other hand, Rabba believes no, that the case here is even if he made him a shliach with edim, he would not become a shliach to be chayv on sin. And what does this mean over here that he's a shoel, is a shliach? It means that he's neman to me. He's a good. This guy's a good guy to me. When so when he makes the edim and he points him as the shliach, it's not that he takes on a shlichus for the effect that he can now obligate the shoel and unseen, but rather simply that the shoel is saying that this guy is a nem unto me. If he's a nem unto me, you could send it with him, but not that that creates the beginning of the shelut. Now, the second half of the Mishnah is the opposite effect. Is amar lo shoel, the shoel, as opposed to here, says, shalchali, send it to me, biyad bini, biyad avdi, biyad shluchi. He says, send it to me with my son, my eved, or my shliach. Then, or, biyad bincha, send it with your son, biyad avdecho, with your eved, or biyad shluchcha. Osha amar lo mashil. Or, in the case here, the mashil, the lender, says to him, areni mishalcha lecha, biyad bini, biyad avdi, biyad shluchi. O biyad bincha, biyad avdecho, biyad shluchcha. Vamalei ha-shoel, and here the shoel responds, shalach, right? Send it. Vishocha, and then he sends it, umeita, if it dies on the derech, chayav. In this case, he is chayav because here he became a shoel, either from the moment it basically leaves the hands of the mashil. As opposed to in the first case, when the borrower is taking something and the mashil sending it to the borrower, the she'elah does not begin until it reaches the hands of the borrower. In this instance, where the borrower is requesting the mashil to send it, ayidei certain shliach, or the mashil is offering to send it and the shoel accepts, then there is shlichut. There is shlichut here. If that's the case, the she'elah begins from the moment it leaves the house of the lender. So obviously the difference in the din. The difference in the din is when the mashil is sending it to him, to the shoel, then he's patur until it reaches his hands. I mean, anything that happens on the way. On the other half, in the second half of the Mishnah, where the shoel is the one requesting and basically saying to the mashil, send it with these individuals, those individuals become an extension of the shoel. If they're an extension of the shoel, then they, right, in that sense, they become the new, that's when the she'elah starts. If that's when the she'elah starts, anything that happens on the derech, that own sim that happened on the derech, will be the responsibility of the she'el. Chayim b'shat she'machzirah, it's the same thing when the requirement or the obligation to return the object, then the same will be in the opposite form of who initiates And who requests, when does the Sheila terminate? Does it terminate when it reaches the Mashiel? Or does it terminate when it leaves the hands of the Shoel? And that will depend on whose request for the usage of the intermediary is. If it's the request of the, if it's the Shoel doing it, then the Sheila won't end until it reaches the Mashiel. On the other hand, if it's the Mashiel requesting that the Shoel give it to some intermediary, then the Sheila will end at the moment it reaches the hands of the intermediary. Right now, the Gemara questions on the top of Tzadik Tetam and Aleph, Biad of Dochayav. So it sounds like from here that if you send it with his Eved, then he becomes, then he is Chayav. Gemara says, how could that be? You have the Eved of the Mash'il, who is now carrying it to the Shoel, and we know the principle. What's the principle of an Eved? The principle of an Eved is, right, Yad Eved, Kid Yad Rabo. An Eved is considered to be an extension of his master. If he's an extension of his master, then how is it? It never really left the possession of the Mashiel. It never left the possession of the lender. To be, go into the possession of the Shoel, it has to leave the Mashiel's possession. If it's with his Eved, it never left his possession. So Amar Shmuel be'Eved Ivri de lo kani le gufe. Well, our mission is not talking about an Eved Knani. An Eved Knani whose gufo is kanui to the Avdon. Then you say Yad Eved ki Yad Rabo. Then he's an extension of his master. On the other hand, if you say it's an Eved Ivri happens to be Machlokas. We saw this Machlokas in the Gemara Kedushin. Tosus mentions that here. But Machlokas the Gemara Kedushin, whether by an Eved Ivri is Gufa Kanoi or Gufa Eno Kanoi. But here, the Gemara is, at least, even according to the one who says that Gufa Kanoi, that's only the Gabe Girono, Machul. That's his ability whether he can be Mochel, his Giron, right? The remainder of his payment. But not for this respect that he becomes an extension of his Rav. He doesn't become a, again, like the arm of his Rav. If that's the case, once he hands it to the Eved Ivri, it's as if he's handed it to a new distinct ownership. If that's the case, then it's already left the hands of the Mashiel and gone into the hands of the Shoel. Rav offers in a different interpretation. Now, Rav says, a filutema, you can even say. So you could suggest that Rav does not necessarily disagree with Shmuel, but the way it seems the Gemara reads it, and that's the way Tosfos reads it, that this actually is a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. And if that's the case, the halacha is not like Rav, and the halacha will only be like Shmuel here. But Rav suggests, afilu tema be'eved kanani, even if it's an eved kanani, naseko menar hikisha b'makel v'hi tavo. That what Rav is suggesting is that the Eved here is really not so relevant because we have a principle that if an individual asks for the Shoel, for instance, asks the Mashiel to send him an animal, but when he tells him to send him the animal to borrow it, he says to him, listen, give the animal a whack, and the animal will head in my direction. So we have a principle there that once a Shoel asks for an animal in such a manner, then when the Mashiel hits the animal, then as soon as the animal leaves the property of the Mashiel, it goes into the possession of the Shoel, becomes the Shoel's issue or chiyuv or achrayut when it comes to onsin. So if that's the case, so after here, even though the Eved's involved in the process, we're going to look at the Eved as if he's not there. And as if the Eved's not there, then when he says, look, send it with your Eved, it's as if him saying, you know, give the animal a whack and send it in my direction. The Eved is not Malem Murid in this situation. So Gemara says, Meitavei, wait a minute. Hashoel parav shalchalo biyad beno, biyad shlucho, chayaf, biyad avdo, patur. So Gemara says, wait, we have a braisa that is obviously not like our Mishnah. This is talking about the seifa, the second case in the Mishnah, a case where the Mashiel is sending it on at the behest of the Shoel. And in this case, it says that if he sends it with the shlucho or his beno, then he is chayav, then the Shoel is chayav, b'yad avdo, but if he sends it with the eved of the Mashiel, he's going to be patur. So how do you reconcile? We have a price that says patur by eved, and our Mishnah says chayav. Gemara says, bishlam on the Shmuel, according to Shmuel, this is easy, matnitan be'eved ivri, breita be'eved kanani. Our Mishnah is a case of eved ivri, and the price is a case of eved kanani. By eved kanani, we have a general principle that yad eved ki yad rabo. So if is yad eved ki yad rabo, then in that instance he's not going to be chayav, he's going to be patur, and that'll be the case of the brisa, because the brisa really never leaves the Mashiel's possession until it reaches the Shoel, because he sent it with his eved. If he sends it with his eved, the eved is just like his arm being extended all the way to the Shoel, and that's why the brisa says patur. Whereas our Mishnah, as Moshe explained, is talking about the case of an Eved Ivri. Since the case of Ivri is Gufo Eino Kanoi Lo, then the Eved looks like or is actually a distinct ownership. And if he's a distinct ownership, when the Mashil gives it over to the Eved Ivri, it's as if he handed it to the Shoel, because he did it at the behest of the Shoel. And therefore, the Sheila begins from the moment it's handed over to the Eved Ivri. That works well according to Shmuel. Elo the Rav Kasha. According to Rav, how is he going to explain this? Right? Because Rav just says, Nasik Omer, when you hand it over to your Eved Kanani, it's as if you said such a phrase. If it's as if you said such a phrase, then it should always be that way. How's Rav going to explain the difference between the Braisa and the Mishnah? So, Amar Lecha Rav, Lo Tema Nasik Amarle, Ela Ema Be'amarle. It's not a case where he says Nas, it's as if he said it, but no, literally in a case where he said it. So the difference between the Braisa and the Mishnah will actually be have to do with what the Shoel said. Our Mishnah is a case, he says, listen, hit the animal and send it in my direction. Send off the animal in my direction. So we know there that in a case, even without an Eved, if the person hit the animal and said, come over in my direction, that would be fine, meaning that as soon as it left the property of the Mashil, it would come into the possession of the Shoel. So it's over here. Just because there's an Eved involved, it's Enimala Venomari, it doesn't make a difference. The Eved is not relevant to the case at all, because it's as if he just hit the animal and the animal's going to go. On the other hand, the case of the Braisa where he's Patur is where he never makes such a statement. He just says, send it with your Eved. He just says, send it with your Eved. Since he didn't give any additional instructions, then it becomes Eved, Skiad, Eved, Kiyad Rabo. Right, that the Eved is just an extension of his Rav, an extension of his Adon. If that's the case, then it's still in the possession of the Mashil until it reaches the hands of the Shoel. Unless he makes the explicit statement to send the animal, and then the Eved becomes irrelevant. But if he doesn't say to send the animal independent of the Eved, then the Eved is, again, the conveyor of the object. He becomes the shliach, but he can't, since he's not separate as a separate identity than his owner, therefore it remains in the possession of the owner until it reaches the shoel, and that's why he's patur in the braisa. So now, just a couple of quick things here. Number one is that the fact that an Eved Knani, the distinction that Shmuel made before between Eved Knani and Eved Ivri, the fact that an Eved Knani is Gufu Konoi and Eved Ivri is Eno Gufu Konoi, we learned in the Gemara in Kedushin, it happens to be Machlokas in the Gemara in Kedushin, whether an Eved Ivri is really Gufu Konoi or En Gufu Konoi. So Tosfos says, even according to the one, or even according to that view, that we say that Eved Ivri is Gufu Konoi, that's Hainu the Indian Shen Girano Machul. In Machal Balpeh Elabishtar, that he can't be Mochel on his Girono, he must do it through a star, he can't do it Balpeh. So that's from the sense that it's Gufu Kanoi. But not enough. The Eved Ivri is not considered or classified as Gufu Kanoi to the extent that he'll become an extension of his Eved. That he's not viewed as distinct ownership, even according to the one who says that Eved Ivri is Kanoi the Gufu. That's number one. Number two is, Tosfos points out before we had the Gemara earlier, that discussed the fact that Sheila Bibalim includes a case where the Baal sends an Eved. So over here, what's ended up happening here? The Shoel is asking him, listen, send me the animal, and with your Eved. So now, what is he doing? He's lending the Eved and lending the animal to this individual. So now you have what we should be, what's called Sheila Bibalim. If it's Sheila Bibalim, then the Shoel should be Patur, simply because it's Sheila Bibalim. So Tosfos draws a distinction between the cases we saw before and the case over here. And that is, Afo Pisha of Domo Licha Lovi Sheila Bibalim. Why? That's only when the owner goes along with the para, b'shalach avdo b'mkomo, and he sends his Eved in his stead. So when he sends his Eved in his stead, then that's called Sheila Bibalim. But aval hocha sheshoelet avdo, over here where he's simply sending the Eved, havalei kishol shtei parot, avdo kibem todami. It's as if he lent out two animals, meaning because the Eved is a possession of the owner, just like the behemoth is a possession of the owner. It's as if he lent him two objects. It's not like that Sheila Bibalim, when we say that Yad Eved Giyad Rabo, that he can be the Balim. Now he can only be the Balim if the Balim were the ones who were supposed to go, and send the Balim sends a replacement. So when he sends a replacement, then the Yad Eved Giyad Rabo is acting instead of his Rav, mean that he's in place of his Rav. If that's the case, it's Sheila Bibalim. On the other hand, if he just simply lends the Eved and he lends the Parah, that doesn't come Sheila Bibalim. We don't view that as Yad Eved Ki Rabo, that he becomes as if the Rav is there. No, we don't say that. So it also says, but rather that's considered like he lent him two separate possessions. Now, Mara says, Itmar, Yishilani Paratcha, right? This principle that Rav is working with is based on this principle that we know. Yishilani Paratcha, lend me your Parah, Amalar Biyadmi. Said, with whom? says, Amalei Kisha b'makel v'tavo, just hit it, give it a whack, and it'll head in my direction. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Avu, Amar Rav, Kevin Shiatzat Mishut Mashil Umeita Chayav. As soon as it leaves the possession, the property of the Mashil, then the Shoel becomes responsible. If it dies, the Shoel is on the hook for it. Why exactly this works seems a little different. Rashi seems to indicate that it's an issue of Hefker, that the Shoel basically believes that the Mashil will be Mafkir, the object, as soon as it leaves its property. So the Shoel is taking possession of it as it becomes Hefker when it leaves its property. The Mashil will let it go. As soon as it leaves the property, the Mashil is now Mafkirit, and the Shoel takes possession of it. And that's why the Shoel becomes Chayav, in the sense that he becomes obligated, responsible for it at that moment. Atosvos is more particular about what the needs are here, but he says that the Shoel here needs some form of Kinyan, right? And that Kinyan, in order to start this, that Kinyan has to be affected, and if it's a Kinyan Mishicha, there are only certain locations where a Kinyan Mishicha will work. So he says, where is that? That's in Sidei Rishut Rabim and the Simta. So the way Tosos phrases is that if the animal literally went out of here into Rishut Rabim, then the Shoel would not take possession of it, since a Kinyan Mishicha would not work in that location. But rather, it has to be that the animal is leaving the property of the Mashil and entering into a Simta or Tzidei Rishut Rabim, a place where a Kinyan Mishicha is effective. So it's as if the Shoel was Moshechet once it reached that location. It's as if the Shoel made a Kinyan Mishicha. At that moment, it reached a location where he's able to make a Kinyan Mishicha, and that would be in Tzidei Rishut Rabim or in the Simta, but not in literally in a Rishut Rabim. As opposed to Rashi, who seems to be, for the next Gemara, seems to be indicating right, that the fact that the Mashil is willing to relinquish possession without any accompaniment, right, in a sense, not mafkir in the sense of giving up total ownership, but mafkir in the sense that he's willing to say that when it leaves my property, it's out of my possession, right, that's enough for the Shoel to come in then and take possession or to be responsible for it, because the Mashil has removed himself from that animal in the sense that he no longer thinks that he is responsible or attached to the animal, and therefore the Shoel comes in to fill in his place because of what he's agreed to. So where it says, Neima Lemisailet, let's say that we have a Brice that supports this position of Rav Nachman. Right? It says, the Brice says, Yishilani Pratcha, Ramalei Biyadmi. It says, Lemmi a para. It says, Who should I send it with? Ramalei, Kishav Makel Vahitavo. Just give it a whack and it'll come to me. Kevin Shiatzat Mishut Mashil, as soon as he leaves the possession of Mashil, Meita, and it dies, Chayav. He's responsible. So it sounds exactly like Rav Nachman. This Brice should support Rav Nachman. So I'm Rav Ashi, no. That the Brice doesn't necessarily have to support him. Hachov Mayaskin, what are you talking about here? It's a case here where the property of the Shoel is captive to the Mashil. I mean that from Rishut Rabim, you can enter into the property of the Mashil, the lender, and then to get to the Shoel's property, there's only one way in. You have to go through the Mashil's property. So now, when you're standing in the Mashil's property, and he blocks the animal's way from going to Rishut Rabim, there's only one way for it to go now. If he pushes it or gives it a whack, there's only one direction for it to go, and that's into the property of the Shoel. So maybe that's the case in the Brisa. The case in the Brisa, why when it leaves the property of the Mashil, it goes into the possession of the Shoel, is because that's exactly what's happening. When it leaves the Mashil's property, it's going into the Shoel's property, and that's why the Shoel takes possession of it. So that's what he says. Kemet shiyotza mishut mashil meita chayav. Amar Rav Yashir hachem ezgina kon shayita chatzero shoel lifnim chatzero shu mashil. The chi mishal chalo, when he sends it, vaday lahat amazla, it's definitely going into the possession of the Shoel. He says, yochi ma'ala memra. Then what's the chiddush of the brisa? Obviously, if it's going only from the Mashil's property to the Shoel's property, then there's only one place for it to go, and there's only one possession it's going into, and that's the Shoel's possession. So what's the question? What's the chiddush? Why do you have to tell me that? Amar says, lo, tzricha, the ika gazaito, that there's a possibility that it would hide itself, or there are little corners or places that the animal could go hide besides from going directly into the possession of the Shoel. So ma'adutem, what I've thought, lo samchadate. So as we've mentioned many times, that samchadate has to do with the mindset of the koneh, the one who is buying it here. So what is the mindset of the koneh? Is the koneh willing to take responsibility? So that's only if he believes the mocher is really giving it to him, or is really going to come to him. So in this instance, we would have thought maybe the koneh over here doesn't really samchadate, doesn't really enter into taking on responsibility, because he's not certain that the animal will reach him. I mean, that when he gives it a whack, sure, it's not going to Rishut Rabim, but it might go to his property or it might go to these corners. So I thought maybe he's not samchadate, because it's not certain it's going to reach the property of the Shoel. So the Gemara says, no, that's the Kamash Malan of the Brice. The Brice is teaching us that there is samchadate over here, right? That Dilma Kaimu Hatam, Because what is easy? It won't be Sumech Da'ah because he'll think the animal will stay in the property of the Mashiach. V'lo Atya, Azel Lehedja, he won't come directly into the presence of the Shoel. So Kamash Malon, the Bereshit teaches the Samchodate that he is relying on this. When he tells him to hit the animal and head out, then that's literally what he means. He means that it's going to go, I am going to take possession if it enters my property. Now, it does have to enter his property. He doesn't come into possession. He doesn't come responsible for the animal until it actually enters his property. Before he enters his property, obviously it's still in the possession of the Mashiach. So both we need. In the Havamin, it would have been, even if it entered his property, he wouldn't have made a kinyane because he wasn't Sumech Da'at. Conclusion of the Braisa is that even though it's a captive property and the animal only has one place to go, which is the property of the Shoel, but he does have other alternatives to go hide or other things like that. Nevertheless, we say that the Shoel is Sumech Da'at, that when the Mashiach sends it, it will end up in his property and that he will make a kinyan or become responsible for it. And therefore, when it enters his property, he does take possession of it. So the Braisa is talking about that unique case, and therefore it won't be a proof to the position of Rav Nachman, who makes a broader statement that even when it crosses through Reshut HaRabim, that even when there's a Reshut HaRabim between the property of the Mashiach and the Shoel, even in that case, when it leaves the Mashiach's property, it goes into the possession of the Shoel. So that case, that the Braisa didn't address. It only addressed this narrow case where it goes directly into the property of the Shoel. But maybe in a case where it goes into Reshut HaRabim, the Mocher would not, or the Kone would not believe that the Mocher would relinquish his ownership at that point in time or be willing to do this because he now has an animal out of the Reshut HaRabim unaccompanied. So since the Shoel doesn't think the Mashiach is going to do this or going to willing to relinquish his ownership, therefore the Shoel doesn't really believe he's taking a Kinyan. So that maybe the Braisa doesn't agree to. But that's what Rav Nachman comes along and says, yes, that even in that case, we say that the Mashiach is willing to do this and have the Shoel enter into responsibility from the time that it leaves the property of the Mashiach. All right, so now this is a statement we saw together in Kiddushin of Rav Huna, which is an interesting statement that Amar Rav Huna, Shoel Kardum Mechavero, a person who borrows a hatchet from his friend, Bakabo, if he uses the hatchet, he actually physically uses it, Kano, then he's Koneh. Lo bakabo, if he does not use it, lo kano, then he's not kone. The Gemara says, the mai hilchos. So, like, what is this for? What are you telling me? Where's this kinyan from? Ilema the onsin, if you're telling for ones, maishna para. What's the difference para? Mishat sheila. I mean, para, once the sheila is affected, as soon as the sheila goes into effect, the onsim start. So why is this different by the kardum? As soon as he takes possession of the kardum, why is it the sheila in effect to be chayav and onsin? Why do we require him to use the kardum for it to become a chiyuv over here? Ella must be for something else. And what is that? The chazara. For the mash'il to reverse his position, for him to back out of the lending. Bakabo, if he uses it, lo matzi hadarbe, mash'il. Then the lender cannot back out of the shela. Lo bakabo, if he hasn't used it yet, matza mash'il hadarbe. The mash'il can reverse his position. All right, so that allows him to reverse it. Uplige de Rab Ami. This position of Rav Huna disagrees with the position of Rav Ami. Damar Rav Ami, Hamashil Kardum Shel Hekdesh. Someone who borrows a hatchet of Hekdesh, Ma'al Lefi Tovat Hanashibo. He's Ma'al based on the value of the goodwill that is generated through the lending. V'chaveiro Mutar Levakeh Bo L'Chatchila. And his friend is able to use it L'Chatchila. So now, what's the case here is, right, you have someone who has a Kardum Shel Hekdesh, right? He has a hatchet of Hekdesh. And then, right, he hands it over or lends it out to another individual. So now, once he lends it out to this other individual, right, what has he done? What is the benefit that he has generated from lending out? Anyway, what's the general benefit of any lender to a borrower? That's what we call Tovatana, goodwill. Right, because you're not gaining any money from this. You're not getting paid to lend it out. So only thing that you are generating over here is goodwill. So what you use the hekdesh for is that you created goodwill. So creating that goodwill is tovatana, right? Shibon. So that's what the mashiel, the lender here, is chayav. Now we have a principle in general with regards to meila that if something's hekdesh and somebody's moel in the hekdesh, what happens at that point in time? The hekdesh is yotzei l'chulin. It becomes complete chulin. So once the mash'il has been mo'el in this item, then for the shoel, it becomes complete chulin. If it's complete chulin, then chaveiro mutar levakeh bo l'chatchila. He can go ahead and use it freely because now for him or from his perspective, it becomes complete, right, complete chulin. So now, if that's the case, what do we see from this? When is the moment of Sheila, or when is the moment that one cannot back out of the Sheila? According to Rav Huna, we just said before, he has to start using it. Our Brice is suggesting that the Mash'il is already Chayav for the goodwill, right, for the lending, once he hands it over to the Shoel. As soon as he hands it over, he's Chayav Etovat HaNashebo. That means that it must be, at that point in time, he cannot reverse the transaction. For, if he was able to reverse the transaction, what would we say over here? Vilo Kono, Amai Ma'al. If he was not able to kone it, why is there Mila here? And why can the Shoel use it as if it's gone to Chulin? Nihadre, let him return the axe to him, or he'll pull it back, meaning he'll take it back, he won't have a kinyan, and there won't be any Mi'ilah. Meaning that, why is the Mi'ilah happen from the moment he does or begins the Sheila, if you need him to use it in order to make it irreversible? If it's still reversible at that point in time, then all the Mashil has to do is go say, take it back. Or the Shoel gives it back, and there's no Mi'ilah over here. Right? How can you permit him to use it now, the Shoel to use it, because we're not certain that the Mashil has been Moel. The Mashil will only be Moel once the Shoel has used it. So it must be that Rav Ami disagrees with Rav Huna's position. He believes that from the moment the Sheila, there's a kinyan, a normal kinyan in the Sheila, that's when the Sheila becomes irreversible, not by usage. Right? The Re explains over here, just a little note here, the Re explains when it comes to this Me'il over here, this Me'il is a little strange. So he has to, generally, when we talk about the Me'ila, right, it's because you've paid for the full value of the item to Hekdesh. You've basically replaced the item for Hekdesh by paying for the value that you got. And therefore, when the other person uses it, it's already Chulin because you've paid for it. But that's not the case over here. Oh, the case over here, right, the Mashil's only paying for the Tovat Hana, and then the Shoel gets full usage of the item. So the Re makes a suggestion, and he concludes that over here, the item will be Chulin only for the amount of time of the Sheila, the lending. That after the period of the lending is over, it will revert back to being a Hekdesh item. Because what did the Mashil? The Mashil paid for the Tovat Hana. And what is the Tovat Hana? The amount of time that he lent it to the borrower. So the borrower can use it for the time that was allocated to him as a Sheila. But as soon as that time is over, the item will then become Hekdesh again, because that's all the Mashil paid for. That's all the Me'ila that he paid for. But as opposed to if you gave it to him, I mean, if you literally gave it to him, natanlo, if you gave it to him, then he would be chayav for paying for the entire mi'ilah, for the entire item. In that instance, then you would have to, you'd be chulin legamre. You could use it forever and it would remain chulin forever. But here, because he's only paying for the tovat hana, then all that is taken away from hekdesh, or all that becomes chulin, is the usage period that is given over to the shoel. So it's very interesting, just an interesting point that the Re makes here, because of the payment of Me'ila, how much chulin is really created, which has to be in some sort of, right, par with the amount paid is the amount of chulin that's created. It sounds like the Shoel will be Moel at that point in time, because he's the one using the actual Hekdesh beyond what would have been the allocated period, meaning that he's not no longer following the instructions of the Mashil. All right, so now, Upligei de Rabbi Elazar, this statement of Rav Huna also disagrees with Rabbi Elazar. Dam Rabbi Elazar, Keterach shetiknu meshicha b'lekuchot, tak tiknu kach tiknu meshicha b'shomrim. That the same kinyan meshicha that works by lekuchot, by buyers, also works by shomrim. So now, it's clear here that the kinyan we're talking about over here is not the kinyan over here is not the basic kinyan of shomrim, which is to make you chayav in onsin, right? That's what Tosfos says here. Lo litchayev onsin kamar. Right? It's not here to make you chayav onsin. That shomer chinam, but lo mishicha chayev b'shia. Shomer chinam without any kinyan becomes chayav in chayav as a shomer chinam. You don't need a kinyan for the shomer to become a shomer. We talked about this before, even through dvarim, even through speech, right? Actual agreement. There's a shibud nefesh by the shomer, and he can generate the chiyuvim over here. So Tosa says that the kinyan here of the Shomrim is also this idea that he's not able to reverse it. I mean that once he creates the Shomer Chinam, or once he creates this, that the Balim can't reverse their position, which would really not be relevant by Shomer Chinam and Shomer Sechar, but more by Shoel and Socher. Rabbi Shaul Tzocher, once you've entered into this type of agreement, the Kenyan Mishicha works like a lokeach, which is that the transaction now becomes irreversible. The Sheila and the Schirut are in effect. And that's what he means, that the Kach, just like with the Kuchot, there's a Kenyan Mishicha, so too by Shomrim, there's a Kenyan Mishicha to create the same idea, which is that it's irreversible. Right? The Rambam says that's also aflit chayev onsin, meaning that it's even to be mechayev or also to be chayev and onsin, that the Mishicha works for both. That it works both to make it irreversible, but also to generate the chayev onsin. And now, Tanya Nami Hochiv, a brisa that supports that position of Rabbi Lazar, Shem Shetiknu Mishicha B'lekuchot, Kak Tiknu Mishicha B'shomrim. Ukeshem, again, we saw this together in Baba Kama. Mark continues, the shame shakarka nickname bekesiv shtar v'chazaka. Just like the Kenyan for karka is kesiv shtar v'chazaka, kach schirut nickname bekesiv shtar v'chazaka. So too schirut works the same way with kesiv shtar v'chazaka. Where it says schirut my vite. What does schirut have to do with kesiv shtar v'chazaka? Schirut is like a normal Kenyan of metaltalin. It should work with a Kenyan mishicha. What are you entering into kesiv shtar v'chazaka? So the answer is obvious. I'm Rav Chista, schirut karka. We're talking about renting property. When it comes to the rental of property, in order to engage or enter into a rental of property, the same way that when you have by lekuchot buyers of property, the kinyan is kesef shtar chazaka. So do by schirut of karka. If you want to make it so, according to Tosos, it's irreversible, right? Meaning that the schirut will be entered to. Right? That's a kinyan of kesef shtar chazaka will work the same way. They will function just like by a koach to make it a schirut be locked in, and that the maskir cannot back out of the transaction. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel starts with new din. Hi, man, the gazil chavitza the tamrei. Someone who steals pressed dates, mechaveiro from his friend, veitba chamishim tamrei. And in this unit, I don't know if this, it's not clear to me if this is like a standard date press has 50 in it, or this happens to be the situation here, it's 50. Seems from the Gemara almost that it might be in standard because of what you're going to say here. So now, what happens? If they are sold, agav hadadi, if they're sold as a unit, I mean, if the 50 pressed dates together are sold as a unit, mizdaben b'nun nachichado, sell it for 50 minus 1. I mean, that you pay, they say they're sold for a pruta each, then you pay 49 for 50. I mean, they throw in the 50th for free. Chado, if they are sold one by one, then the mizdaben b'nun, then you pay 50 prutot. Basically, that's the margin. The profit margin in the tamarim is 2%. Which is this one pruta, meaning that if I buy in bulk, I buy 50, I pay 49 for it. If I sell them out one by one, I make a pruta on each one of them. So my profit is that one pruta, right, over the amount. So that's the two ways. So now the question is, this person who stole it, how does he repay? Does he pay 49 or does he pay 50? So Gemara says the hedjot, if he's repaying a layperson, mishalem chamishim nichichado, he pays 50 minus 1, he pays only 49 when he sells it to him. Lehekdesh, on the other hand, if he's repaying hekdesh, it was stolen from hekdesh, mishalem chamishim v'chumshayu, he has to pay 50 plus the additional fifth by mi'ilah. When someone is mo'el in hekdesh, they pay for the karen, the principal, plus the additional fifth, the chumish on top of it. So he has to pay 50, the full amount of 50, plus the fifth on top of it. That is not true of someone who's mazik hekdesh. This is the din we saw. He doesn't play a chomesh. Because the pasuk says ish ki ochal kodesh prat mazik. So it's only when you're chal, when you get hanah, when it's a form of hekda, but not the form of mazik. If you're mazik, you don't pay the additional chomesh when it comes to hekdesh. Only in the cases of hanah or me'ilah is where you pay the additional chomesh. Tosafos points out that truthfully by mazik you don't even pay the keren. Because we saw that in the Gemara of Bava Kama, that Hekdesh is Mufka from the Parsha of Nizakin. So you won't even have to pay for the Karen. So it says, yeah, Midrabanan, you still have to pay for the Karen. But Midrabanan, they don't impose the Chomesh, because then the Oraisa says that there's no Chomesh, there's no Karen, there's nothing by Mazik. Now, Matri Flor of Bibi, Babaye, the Hejot, Amay Mishalim, Chamishim, Nechichado. Why is the din of Hejot different than a Hekdesh? Why are you paying him 49 and not the full 50? Namely, the person who was stolen from, the Nigzal, can say, I was planning on selling them one by one. If I was going to sell them one by one, they're worth 50 to me. How come this individual can pay 49? So Amar Rav Huna, Braid Rav Yeshua. So this is what we learned together in the Gemara in Baba Kama. How do you assess damage done by an animal? Right? When an animal goes into a field, eats a field, how do you assess the animal? How do you assess the field? Shamin Beit Sa'ab Oto Sadeh Tnan, right? You assess the aruga, the patch, based on this Beit Sa'ab. So if you remember, if you just this quickly, a little quick chazara on Baba Kama, turns out that this is a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about how to understand the Gemara of Shomen Beit Sa'a. Rashi believes that there's actually a two-stage you remember this, there's a two-stage assessment. There's one stage where you assess how much a sa'ah is within the context of 60 sa'ah. You look at the sa'ah, a beit sa'ah, in terms of a field that had 60 sa'ah. Then once you've assessed the value of a beit sa'ah within 160, within a field of 60, then you look at the arugah, the patch. How much does this field sell as a sa'ah? And how much does it sell with a sa'ah without that arugah there? I mean, then there's a double-layered assessment according to Rashi. The Ri in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, he does it over here, also rejects Rashi's explanation of the two-tiered assessment. And the Ri basically says that it's all 60 times. The assessment always is just a multiple of the original assessment. And that means it's always 60 times the original assessment. So whatever damage is done, you look at it in the context of 60 times. The basic premise of the Gemara here is that when you talk about damage of the mazik, we go to kula. When we come to assessing the damage of the mazik, we don't look at the actual value of the object piece by piece, or like the arugah itself. We look at it in the context of the larger area. So again, according to Rashi, that means that two-tiered assessment. According to the Ri, it means 60. You do it at 60 times the amount. Right, if it's 60 times the amount, then you look in the bigger context. So too over here. When you look at the tamarim and you're going to assess the hezek that's done here, we don't look at it tamar by tamar. We don't look at it date by date. We look at it as, well, okay, here's the whole package of dates. What is that worth? And so that's worth 49. So that's all he has to repay is 49. Lememra, so Gemara says we can conclude from this, the Shmuel Savar, din hejot, lavka din gavoa dami, that somehow hekdesh and a layperson have a different din. Because by a layperson, you're going to pay 49, and by hekdesh, you're going to pay 50. Amar says, Vahatnan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Natal Evan Okura. Person who takes a stone or a beam, Mehakdesh. And the Gemara in Chagiga and other places discusses that this is the Gizbar. It's actually the treasurer of Hekdesh that's doing this. If he takes a stone or a Korah from Hekdesh, Lo Ma'al. He's not Mo'el. Right, not lechaveiro. On the other hand, if he gives it to his friend, right, hu ma'al lechaveiro lo ma'al, then the gizbar, the treasurer, is ma'al and not his friend, because he's the one who is taking hekdesh, now taking hekdesh out of hekdesh's possession and giving it to someone else to become chulin. Now again, as long as it's in the hands of the gizbar himself, it hasn't left hekdesh's possession. But he gives it to his friend, then it's left hekdesh's possession. The gizbar is ma'al, and therefore chaveiro has chulin now. Banah b'toch beito. If the gizbar builds it into his hands, lo ma'al ad shiyudor tachteh. He's not mo'el until he lives under it. B'shaveh pruta, the amount of a shaveh pruta. Now, what does that mean? That means that the gizbar has possession of the board because he is the treasurer of Hekdesh. So simply being in his possession is not enough to make him mo'el. Now, truthfully, if he built into his house and he cut the board or he nailed the board, he did something that changed the form of the board, he was mo'el at that point. It wouldn't be a question. But the Gemara there establishes a case where he sticks the board on top of his sunlight or some sort of hole in his roof. He places the board down as it is on the top of the roof. So now, number one is he hasn't done any shinui in the board. Number two is he hasn't taken out of the possession of Hekdesh because he's the gizbar, he's the treasurer. So when does he become the mo'el? When is he actually mo'el in Hekdesh? When he actually uses the board. How would he use the board if he sits under the board for a hana that's worth a shaveh pruta? Then, we haven't gotten to the question yet. This is the question. V'yotiv rabavua kameid Rabbi Yochanan. Rabavua is sitting before Rabbi Yochanan. V'yotiv v'kamar mishmeid Shmuel. And he says over in the name of Shmuel, Zotomeret. We can conclude from this Mishnah, Hadar b'chatzer chavero shalomidato, someone who lives in his friend's property, shilomidato, without his permission, tzarich lalodo tzchar, he has to pay him for it. Why? Because it's the same thing over here. Is the gizbar have permission to use this item? No. He doesn't have permission to use it. He's doing it shilomidato, right? He's doing it without the permission of, quote-unquote permission of Hekdesh. He's doing something against the will of the Torah, against the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's doing it shilomidato, and, right, he has to pay when he lives under it. So too, a person who lives in his friend's property, even though he wouldn't otherwise have to pay rent, and the other person wouldn't have collected rent, this is what's called zenene vizilo chaser. It sounds like he should have to pay. But what do you see from Shmuel here? Shmuel is drawing an equivalence between hejot and hekdesh. He's saying, I have a din by hekdesh, and therefore I can apply whatever din is by hekdesh, I can apply it to a layperson, I can apply it to a case of hejot, it's a dar b'chatzeiro, shel chaveiro, meaning that a case of zenene vizilo chaser, you should have to pay, just like you have to pay by hekdesh. So Gemara says, it's unclear what the girsa here is, whether it's Amarle Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan responded to him, or this is Stamma de Gemara saying this right now, is Hadar Shmuel Mihahi. Shmuel backed away from this position of comparing the case of Zenenev Ezel Chaser to the case of Hekdesh. Gemara says, Umimai Dimai Hadar Bey. How do you know Shmuel backed out of that position? Dilma Mehahadar. Maybe he backed out of the Argamar, the beginning of Argamar, which is the case of the Tamarim. Gemara says, look, Mehai Hadar Bey Kedrova. Over here, he definitely went back on it, like the principle of Rava. This is the principle of Rava we saw again in Baba Kama, Dama Rava, Hekdesh, Shalomidat, Kehejot Midat, Dami. That Hekdesh, Shalomidat, there is no such thing as Hekdesh, Shalomidat. All right? Hejot Midat, it's the equivalent of taking it from Hejot with his knowledge. Why is that? So the way Rashi phrases it here, we also saw this again in the Gemara Baba Kama, Shechdeg Shmunach Limol Cholaba, Vein Mochebi Adon. When it comes to Hekdesh, there's nobody there to say, don't do it. There's nobody to say, you know, standing there. There's no other owner, quote unquote, that says, don't do it. I mean, that in a normal case by a layperson, you have an owner, and the owner can either object or not object. So his objection is not objection, makes it, you know, shidat or shlomidat, right? Whether he's, you know, aware and acquiesces, right? Or whether he is not aware, or he's not bothered by it. But here, Rahman Armar, Mandamitana Limo, Rahman Yada. That over here, one who comes along and gets hana, right, that is considered mi'ilah, v'rachmana yodo. And the rachmana, meaning the Torah, but really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. Meaning that there's no such thing as shlo midat hekdesh. Right, the Torah says, if you use something, you are mo'el. And the Torah, or Hashem, always knows. There's no such thing as taking something shlo midat when it comes to hekdesh. So therefore, that's why when it comes to hekdesh, hekdesh is always midat. It's always with the knowledge of the owner. So you can't compare the case over here. There's just no way to compare the case of Hekdesh to the case of a layperson because the two are not on the same plane, right? Because by Hekdesh Shalomidat has a din of Kehejot Midat. I mean, it's the equivalent of a, right, the acquiescence or having a Hejot who knows. And if a Hejot who knows, then that's not a case of Zenenev is Lo Chaser. So Amar Rava. Rava says, Hanu Shokulai. So Rava is dealing with these, call them schleppers, right? These people used to carry the loads. The Tavru Chavita de Chamra de Chenvo. They were caring for a storekeeper or somebody who was going, they were carrying a barrel of wine for him. But Yom de Shuka, Mizdabin Behe, on the day of the Shuk, this barrel of wine will sell for 5, right? Bishar Yome, on any other day of the week, Mizdabin Be'arba, it will sell for 4. So Ahadrule Biyom de Shuka, I'm going to read this simply. This the simplest way to read it is like the Rush. Who says, if they return it, if they return it on the day of a shuk, mahadrulei chavita techamra, then they can return him a barrel of wine. If they bring it to him, if they return him his barrel of wine on the day of the shuk, then they can return him a barrel of wine. Why? Because a barrel of wine on the day of the shuk is worth 5, and they damaged him something that was worth 5. Bishar yome, the way the Rush reads it, on any other day, mahadrulei hey, they have to pay him back 5, right, dinar or 5, whatever the amount is that this chavit 5 is worth. So he has to pay them the full 5. Because on any other day, if they return him simply a barrel of wine, they're returning him 4 and not 5. So you have to return him cash of 5. That's the way the Rush learns. Velo amron, and we don't see this, elo delo havale chamra elo zvune. Right, that this is a case where he didn't have any other additional wine. Meaning that the vendor who was going to the shuk did not have additional wine. But if the vendor had additional wine, he had additional wine to sell, he could have sold it. The fact that he didn't sell the additional wine indicates that there was no demand for this wine. That means that the barrel they broke did not cause him the loss in the Yom HaShuk because he had other wine to sell. The fact that he couldn't sell it shows to you that he wouldn't have sold this barrel either. Then, if that's the case, right, then he don't have to pay him hay. They should have to pay him 5 because truthfully, the barrel was not worth 5 to him. It was only worth 4. It's worth the same as a day that it wasn't a shuk day because he couldn't have sold it on the shuk day anyway for 5. He couldn't have realized 5 anyway. But when he does take the money from them, when he does take the hay from them, man chile agar tirche v'dmei barzenaita. And when he does do it, truthfully, he has to deduct from that what it would have cost him. Meaning that if he had to sell it on the Yom HaShuk, if he had to open the barrel and sell it on the Yom HaShuk to realize 5, he can't just simply say, oh, give me 5, because that's what I would have realized. In order to realize 5, he has to do 2 things. One is that he has to do agar tirche. Agar tirche is mean the value, he had to get schleppers to take it to the shuk and to work with him and do all those stuff. Plus, he has to pay Dmei, it's not clear here whether it's Karzanaita or Barzanaita. We saw this again in the Gemara of Bava Kamma. It's either he has to hire a sales guy to go out and, you know, scream in the shuk, you know, wine for five, to go out to get him, drum up business for him, you know, advertising. Or Dmei Barzanaita, Rashi said, remember, if you remember in Bava Kamma, Rashi over here also says that if they used, in order to open a barrel, they had to put in a tap into the barrel. So putting in the tap was an expertise that you had to hire somebody for. Or Rashi here gives a third interpretation, which is Lashon Barza, Kloma Yitziata Yaina Nimkarba Barza Beprutot. Right, that the wine that comes that's sold beprutot, right, that somehow he has that there's some sort of loss or lessen of the money that he's losing here because he's getting a smaller coinage. So in that instance, the Balim here, who are sitting here and saying, listen, you know, I didn't sell him Yom HaShuk. You owe me five because I could have sold it for five. But in order to sell it for five, he had other expenditures, or he had to make an effort to sell it, and his effort to sell it. Now he got to sit in his house, not do anything, and he ends up with five, getting the full five. So what we say to him, deduct. You have to really be honest, or you have to deduct what would have been your expenditures to realize that five. Right? That's the position again here. I'm explaining the Gemara according to the Rush, who's the simplest explanation of this Gemara. On the other hand, Rashi is similar to the Rosh, except for one thing. Rashi says that Biyoma the Shukah, and Tosos explains Biyoma the Shukah the same way here, is not literally that he returns it on the day of the Shuk, but rather he returns it before the next Shuk. He has to return it before the Shuk so that he can sell it the first Shuk that's available, that he could realize the money immediately, that he gets it to him before the Yom HaShuk. But if he misses that Yom HaShuk, then he has to pay him five shekel all the way through because he says, listen, I missed my shuk day. You got to pay me for it. As opposed to the Rosh, who says any time he returns it on the day of the shuk, then he just gives him a barrel of wine because he can realize or he can make it into five shekel on that day. According to Rashi and Tosos, it means no. He should have realized five shekel at this coming day of shuk, and therefore he's got to return it. If he returns it before that Yom HaShuk, then he doesn't have to, he can give him a barrel of wine. If he returns it after that day of Yom HaShuk, he has to pay five. So that's the way Rashi and Tosos learn it. And we'll tell you, we won't get a vote. The Rambam also has an additional interpretation that's the exact opposite of Rashi. Rashi and the Rosh, you would think that Yom HaShuk, he gives him the barrel, and not Yom HaShuk, he gives him five. The Rambam says that Yom HaShuk, he gives a barrel, and not Yom HaShuk, he gives him four. All right, then that, we won't get dipped into that, but just so you know that we show them to explain this Gemara differently. Okay, we'll stop over here.